On a red background, a snaking yellow line forms the letter S. Selmer Pictures presents, in collaboration with Robertson Associates, in slow motion, a dark-haired man wearing a suit glides down a playground slide. Cliff Robertson as Charlie. The man immediately runs for the slide's ladder as children shoot down the slide behind him. Co-starring Claire Bloom. The man climbs the ladder. Later, his tongue sticks out of his mouth as he sails upward on a swing set. A Ralph Nelson film. With Lilia Scala, Leon Janney, and Ruth White. Two children push the seated man as he rises higher and higher. Music by Ravi Shankar. Director of photography, Arthur J. Ornitz. The man crawls through a short concrete pipe. Two children crouch as they follow. Standing, the man runs around the yellow pipe as the two children chase him. He runs off, the children in pursuit. The man climbs the crossed bars of a jungle gym. Executive producer, Selig J. Seligman. From the novel, Flowers for Algernon, by Daniel Keyes. Screenplay by Sterling Siliphant. A boy and a girl press their faces against the man's. Smiling, he covers his face with his hands. Directed and produced by Ralph Nelson. Charlie, the dark-haired man, holds onto the railings of an iron fence as he peers at college students sitting on grass or standing near a tree. With his arms crossed, Charlie leans against a tree. He steps around the tree, then leans back against it. Later, he steps past several students standing outside of a columned building. A passing man tosses his own jacket over his shoulder as he walks. Charlie stops then, following the man, takes off his own brown jacket, and flings it over his own shoulder. In a barren room, Charlie sits at a small chalkboard on a wooden stand. Behind him, a fedora sits on a faded light green dresser. Charlie's mouth hangs open as he slowly writes out misspelled words for Wednesday, work, and school. He sits back against a faded concrete wall. On a classroom blackboard, I live in a house. My house is in Boston. I go to night school. A woman with blonde braids gazes at the words. Alice, a woman with flowing black hair, steps to the blackboard.
It's very good, Mrs. Gardnick.
The woman lays down a piece of chalk, then steps away. Alice turns to a dark-haired woman.
Go to night school. It's very good. There's only one thing wrong. It's the word night. I know it sounds like N-I-T-E, but we spell it N-I-G-H-T, night. Okay?
The woman bows, then walks off. Alice steps toward Charlie, who kneels as he writes on the board.
I can never get that one word, that school. That's wrong, isn't it?
Yeah. It's S. C-H-O-O-L, Charlie, not S-K.
S-C-H-O-O-L, yeah.
Charlie erases part of what he's written.
Okay, everybody. Next Wednesday, we study through page 20. Good night.
As the adult students close their books and stand, a dark-haired woman wearing a red sari steps up to Alice. Outside, the students descend stone steps. Alice and the woman talk as they follow. Walking out last, Charlie starts to button his brown jacket, then pulls it off and slings it over his shoulder.
Yes, come next
week.
Okay? Thank you very much.
Night, Miss Kenyon.
Oh, Charlie, we missed you at the clinic. The doctors wanted to do some tests.
Oh, yeah. Well, I forgot. I went to the library, and I never seen so many books in my life.
Don't forget the clinic tomorrow night.
No, I'm going to write it down on my blackboard twice, I promise.
Good night.
Night, Miss Kenyon.
Alice opens the passenger door of a car, then gets in.
No drive.
A dark-haired man sits behind the wheel.
Thanks for waiting for me.
They drive off.
Good night. Good night.
Later, Alice sits across from Charlie.
For instance, apples and pears. They're both alike because they're both fruit. Do you understand?
Doctors watch through a two-way mirror.
Okay, we'll begin. Shoes and gloves.
As Charlie searches his pockets, a woman makes a note.
Charlie, shoes and gloves.
Oh, my rabbit's foot.
That's good, Charlie.
Shoes,
gloves.
Shoes and gloves. You wear them.
That's right. Airplane, automobile. Airplane, automobile.
You ride him.
Yeah.
A balding doctor peers at the woman's notes.
Morning, afternoon. Morning, afternoon.
Morning.
Charlie, you don't have to worry about passing or failing, not these tests.
Smiling slightly, Charlie peers into the mirror behind Alice and makes a face.
That's a very, very funny face, Charlie. Charlie, I'm going to show you some pictures. Look at me.
On a split screen.
What happened in this picture? What do you see?
A drawing of a family eating dinner.
Is there something missing?
No. I want you to make up a story about these people.
Well, I can't make up a story about people I don't know, Miss Kenyon.
Yes, you can. You can make believe. Make up a story.
Is that a family?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's a family. Who is this?
She points to the mustached father.
Well, it's a father.
Right. That is the father. Then who is this?
That's a mother.
Huh? If that is the mother, then...
Charlie stares blankly at the drawing.
Do you remember your mother?
Yeah, sometimes I remember her. I think I remember her. Sitting on the edge of a bed, putting her hand on my head and saying, "He's burning up." And, but then maybe it was the woman at the Institute, I don't know. Probably the woman at the Institute. That was probably the woman at the Institute.
Lowering his head, Charlie gazes downward. Alice peers at Charlie. In the barren room, Charlie sits hunched forward as he slowly writes misspelled words for Tuesday and work on the chalkboard. At an industrial bakery, brown loaves of bread slide off a conveyor belt. Workers wearing aprons and paper hats grab the loaves, then set them on trays on a different belt. One gray-haired worker notices Charlie, who sweeps a floor partially covered with flour. The man snaps his fingers at two of his co-workers.
Hey, Charlie!
Looking up, Charlie smiles as he steps toward the man.
It's 5 o'clock, Charlie. Forgot what you have to do?
Finish the floor.
Come on, Charlie, think. You were gonna take something home.
Oh, yeah.
For a minute there, Charlie, you had me worried. I mean, you're always thinking such deep thoughts. How are you going to remember a little thing like your landlady's birthday?
Yeah, Miss Apple's going to be real happy, and thanks for making me remember again.
Well, what a pal's for, Charlie. Give me the broom. Me and the boys will help you clean up. Right, fellas?
Right. Come on, Charlie.
Charlie walks off.
Hey, Kim.
What gives?
We filled this pail with raw dough this morning, full of yeast.
Workers hurry after Charlie, who steps past metal shelves of wrapped bread and into a narrow locker room. He stops. A trail of dough spills out of one locker and into a whitish mound on the floor. Charlie's smile disappears as he stares at the dough. He steps to the locker, its metal door bent outward in the middle. Charlie tugs at the door as the others sneak into the locker room. Pulling open the locker, Charlie kneels as he sifts through a gooey mass of raw dough. The others smile as they watch Charlie struggle to extract a pail from the mess. Charlie peers at them. Charlie tries to sit up as he holds onto the pail. He smiles. He slaps raw dough onto his own head. Sitting at his chalkboard, Charlie misspells clinic. Alice talks on a telephone.
Yeah, Charlie again. But he has a marvelous opportunity.
A doctor holds a white mouse in front of Charlie.
Him or her?
We call him Algernon.
The doctor, Anna, hands the mouse to a man in a lab coat.
Please, set up number four.
All right, you can take it away now.
Workers wheel out a cart.
Charlie and Dad, show you something. Okay, dear, see you at 9. Bye.
Gray-haired Dr. Richard Niemer steps past Alice.
Doctor?
He stops.
Why are you using the mouse test?
We're simply using a laboratory animal, Mrs. Kinnean, to spur the subject on to his best effort.
Richard steps to Anna and Charlie. Alice follows.
Now you and Algernon are going to run a race.
Charlie smiles at Alice.
Oh, well, I can beat him because I'm bigger than he is.
It's not that kind of a race.
Anna indicates a maze.
Charlie, what does this look like to
That's
you?
A puzzle.
Very good. That's right. Now watch. We put Algernon in here to start. Then we put some food in here at the finish. And Algernon knows he must find his way through the puzzle if he wants to get the food.
And if he don't?
Then he doesn't get to eat it.
You don't?
Don't worry, Charlie, you won't go hungry. Now, Charlie, this is a diagram. Diagram? It's exactly the same as Algernon's puzzle. You'll take this pencil and draw from the start to the finish without going through any of the lines. You'll start at the same time Algernon does, and we'll see who gets through first. Do you understand, Charlie?
Nodding, Charlie sits. Holding the pencil in his left hand, Charlie hunches over the diagram. An assistant holds Algernon in his hand. Charlie reaches into his jacket pocket and pulls out his white rabbit's foot, which he places on the table in front of himself.
Ready?
The assistant places Algernon in the maze.
Start.
As Algernon runs through the maze, Charlie draws a line on the diagram. Richard glances from Charlie to the mouse, which quickly scampers through the maze's narrow passageways. As Algernon reaches the food, Richard glances at the diagram, then furrows his brow. Charlie glances up, then continues drawing a line between the thick lines of the diagram.
Very good.
Smiling, Charlie glances at Alice, then stands and peers into the maze where Algernon eats.
Hey, he beat me. He beat me. I didn't know mice were so smart.
Algernon stands on his hind legs as he sniffs at a thin wall. Nighttime. In a neighborhood of row houses, a small red car rounds a corner then stops. Inside the car, Alice turns to Charlie, who stares straight ahead. She shakes his arm.
Hey, come on, Charlie, cheer up.
Well, how'd you feel if you was dumber than a mouse? Good night, Miss Kenyon.
Charlie gets out of the car.
Charlie, aren't you going to ask me up? I've never once seen your apartment. I'd like to see it.
Well, it's just a room.
It doesn't matter.
Charlie and Alice step into the foyer of a row house.
It's upstairs.
They ascend a steep staircase. Charlie's landlady, Mrs. Apple, wearing a pale red robe and with curlers in her hair, hurries into the foyer and watches Charlie and Alice climb the steps.
Can you imagine, Monty? Charlie Gordon with a girl. Well, he'd better have her out by 10. There'll be no hokey-pokey in my house.
Upstairs, Alice stands just inside Charlie's room and gazes around herself. Two bare light bulbs cast the only light in a spare room with peeling walls and simple furniture.
It's just our room, Miss Kenyon.
Oh, it's very nice.
Alice spots Charlie's small blackboard. They exchange smiles, then Alice steps across the room. Charlie closes the door. Alice walks up to one wall where a single small black and white photograph hangs.
Who are they?
Oh, that's Gimpy and the guys at the bakery. They're my best friends.
Charlie, may I have a glass of water, please?
Yeah. Would you like a soda pop?
Yeah, that'd be fine.
Charlie opens a small wooden refrigerator, then pulls out a bottle of cola. He sets the bottle and the glass on the refrigerator, then closes its door. Alice watches as Charlie opens the bottle and pours soda into the glass.
Well, how about you?
Oh, that's okay.
Alice takes the glass and taps it against the half-empty bottle. She sips as Charlie downs a big swig.
Sit down.
Yeah,
what? A chair.
Charlie steps to a wooden chair, then removes an alarm clock from its seat. He sets the clock on the floor, then carries the chair to Alice.
Thank you.
She sits. Charlie picks up the small chair next to his chalkboard.
I sit in this chair. It's little, but it's good.
Charlie sets the chair near Alice, then sits.
I had a radio, but it got busted.
Charlie?
Yeah?
Can you keep a secret?
Yeah. I'm a good secret keeper.
That mouse you raised today.
Yeah, that Algernon.
He was very special. He had an operation. When it was over, he was smarter. The doctors are ready to try that operation on a man. They're ready to choose someone now. That's why you had all those tests.
Well, they should have told me. I would have tried harder.
Do you like an operation like that?
Yeah.
Why?
Well, I like to be smarter so that I could understand Gimpy and the fellas at the bakery. There's a lot of the words I don't understand. Just so I could get a little closer, you know.
I think we can get you to raise Algernon again.
I don't know. And Algernon's a smart little mouse.
Ready now? Start.
Algernon scurries down a narrow passageway in the maze. He stops, sniffs, then turns right. Charlie traces a line on the diagram. Bert, an assistant in a white lab coat, holds a stopwatch as he glances from Charlie to the mouse and back. Richard, with an unlit cigarette in his mouth, Anna and Alice stand nearby. Finishing, Charlie peers at Bert. Bert makes a note on a piece of paper. Charlie sets the diagram aside, then flips over his rabbit's foot. Bert rearranges some of the walls in the maze.
Take it easy. You ready? Start.
Well, here are the results. His performance IQ is 59, verbal 69, and full scale 70.
Too low. At least for our first subject.
We have other retardates who might be more suitable.
Well, I've never met one who has Charlie's motivation. He came all by himself for 2 years to night school to try to improve his reading.
It's all very well, Mrs. Kinnean, but I think
you'll have to... Doctor, isn't it true that the average retarded is overly sensitive and sometimes hostile?
Mm.
Well, in Charlie's working environment, he is the butt of all kinds of jokes, some of them cruel, yet he always remains cheerful and pleasant.
The fact remains, he's a grown man.
Doctor, is the operation dangerous?
It need not involve any unusual surgical risk.
It's the post-operative period we are concerned about. The younger our subject, the less complicated his emotional adjustment is apt to be.
Anna turns to Richard.
There is one point in Charlie's favor. Mrs. Kinnear. Whoever we decide on will have to be put in an accelerated learning program. He'll need a full-time teacher. Somebody with Mrs. Kinyon's background, even more important, someone he trusts. Would you be available?
Well, my fiancé and I are planning to work on a joint thesis for our doctorates.
Mm. Well, at the moment, it's all hypothetical anyway.
Of course.
They stand.
Thank you, Mrs. Kinyon.
Thank you, Doctor. Thank you, Doctor.
Grabbing her coat, Alice steps over to Charlie and Bert.
Come on, Charlie, let's go.
Yeah, it's just one more, Miss Kinyon.
Finishing another line, Charlie looks up at Bert.
Yeah. Not quite.
Charlie sets the diagram with the others, grabs his rabbit's foot, then stands. Picking up his coat, he peers into the maze.
You're a smart mouse, Algernon.
Night, Bert.
Right. Night, Bert. Take it easy, Charlie. Night, Algernon.
On an overcast day, Charlie steps up a deserted street toward his home. Climbing the front steps, Charlie steps into the foyer. He ascends the staircase as Mrs. Apple paces the room off the foyer.
No. Take him, Monty. He's one of that new breed of liberal priests. It's no wonder the younger generation are selling their souls to the devil.
In his room, Charlie steps to a wall, then hangs his rabbit's foot on a hook. He touches the soft white fur, then walks to his chalkboard where he sits. Charlie works his mouth as he stares into space. Later, he writes Sunday and bus on the chalkboard. On a gray and foggy day, a bus drives across a stone bridge above a river.
Gentlemen, welcome to the historical tour of Boston. This is the Charles River Basin, where amateur yachtsmen can sail 365 days a year. In the late afternoon, you can see the sculling crews of Harvard, MIT, and other universities practicing for their annual races. On the left is the Prudential Center. The Prudential Tower, 52 stories high, is the tallest building in the continental United States, if you consider Manhattan Island outside the continental United States.
Near the back of the bus, Charlie peers skyward.
Here is Bunker Hill Monument. It stands 220 feet tall, 30 square feet at the bottom, 15 at the top, 294 winding stairs.
People get off the bus.
Take you approximately 20 minutes to walk up, 15 minutes to come down, 10 days to get over.
Smiling, Charlie peers through a window.
The Boston Cambridge area has a total of 189 universities and small colleges. We're now going through Boston University, which includes a school of law, a school of political science, a school of philosophy.
Charlie rotates in his seat as he peers at a sign for Boston University, School of Education, School of Law,
a school of fine arts, and many others. As you make a right-hand turn, look to your left. See the Boston Public Library.
Charlie pulls a pencil from his suit coat pocket, then picks up a piece of scrap paper from the floor. On the paper, Charlie slowly and correctly writes the word school, then underlines the letter C.
As you make a right-hand turn on Boylston Street, look to your right. You will see Trinity Church, founded in 1877, designed by Henry Hobbs and Richardson. Philip Brooks was pastor of this church for 22 consecutive years. While being pastor, he was made bishop of Massachusetts. Most of you people remember Philip Brooks by his famous church hymns. One of the most famous Christmas carols, Old Little Town of Bethlehem. We'll make a brief stop in South Boston to discharge a passenger.
On a street lined with row houses, the bus pulls over. Charlie gets off.
See you next Sunday, Charlie.
Okay.
As he walks past a corner market, Charlie inspects the piece of paper. He starts to slip the paper into his breast pocket, examines it again, then folds it and places it in the pocket. Later, Charlie and his co-workers leave the bakery.
Come on, Charlie, just one beer.
No, I can't. Not tonight, Kemp.
I bet she's going to see that school teacher, huh?
Boy, could I give her a lesson.
I didn't think you went for broads, Charlie.
Sure I do, Kemp.
Hey, what do you do with her, huh?
I promise I can't talk about it.
What do you mean you can't talk about it, Charlie? Ain't I your best buddy?
Sure you are, Kemp.
Well, what's the big mystery?
I promise I can't talk about it.
Charlie, I'm disappointed in you.
Oh, don't be mad at me, Kemp.
So come on over and have a beer, huh? Just a little beer.
Okay.
A bartender places a beer in front of Charlie.
Hey, Charlie, how about playing a little music, huh?
Yeah, okay.
Hey, I got it here.
Hold it, Hank, hold it. Charlie's got lots of dough. Right, Charlie?
Yeah, I save my dough, Gary.
I'll bet you got a bundle tucked under the mattress, huh?
What do you save it for, Charlie?
Oh, I don't know, something.
What?
Something.
So blow two bits, huh, Charlie?
Yeah.
Charlie steps toward a jukebox.
Watch this.
Gimpy signals the bartender, reaches for a wire behind the bar. Charlie drops a quarter into the jukebox. He presses several buttons. Gimpy signals again. The jukebox goes dark.
Hey, Charlie, what did you do to it? Drop a slug in?
Oh, I put a quarter in there, Gimp, a real quarter.
Well, talk to the juke, Charlie, like you always do, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, okay, juke, I put a quarter in there, and you better play, you hear?
Hey, Charlie, juke don't like to be scolded. Juke likes a nice, sweet tone of voice.
Okay, juke, you're a nice juke, and you got nice lights, and you're real nice.
Gimpy motions to the bartender. The lights come back on. Smiling, Charlie hurries back to his seat.
Come on back here, champ.
Nice
hitting, buddy. Hey, Charlie, you hear it's liable to snow tonight?
Oh, I didn't hear that, yeah.
Well, that's what they say. Look, I tell you what. How about stopping off at the corner of Manning and Standish on your way home?
Okay, what do I do there?
Well, I'll tell you, Charlie. A lot of people don't know this. I'm gonna let you in on it. That's where the snow always starts. Yeah, right there on the corner where Manning runs into Standish. Now, you wait there for a while, and when that first flake comes down, you give us a call. That way, we get to get home in time before it really starts coming down. Okay, Charlie?
Yeah. What? Who do I call?
Hey, Patty, give Charles one of your cards.
The bartender hands Charlie a card.
Better get started, Charlie.
Charlie digs a coin from his jacket pocket.
None of that now. I guess I can afford to buy a beer for good old Charlie Gordon, right?
All right, of course. Come on,
go Charlie. Get him, Tiger. Go get him.
Smiling, Charlie leaves.
All right, pal. See you later.
Well, here's to a blizzard.
Gimpy drinks, then squeezes his eyes as he laughs. A police car rounds a corner. Wearing his fedora and with his brown jacket buttoned up, Charlie stands next to a small building. The police car stops.
Hey, buddy, what you doing? What you doing?
Wait and park the snow.
Let's go.
The cops drive off.
Stupid.
Charlie stares into space as he stands by himself on the dark street corner. He gazes skyward. Later, with his hands in his pockets, Charlie shuffles through sand past different colored lengths of concrete pipes at the playground. He steps near the swing set. Stopping, Charlie sits on a swing. He gazes downward.
Charlie
slowly raises his head. Smiling, Alice peers at him.
The operation.
Operation?
Yes.
I made it?
Yes.
Charlie smiles.
I made it!
He swings back and forth.
I made it! I made it! I made it! I made it!
Hospital workers wearing green gowns and white surgical masks wheel Charlie into an operating room. Tightening a sheet around Charlie, they lift him onto an operating table. Two workers wheel out the gurney while a doctor peers down at Charlie, a large bright light above him. Somebody lowers a breathing mask attached to a hose. In a blurry image, a hazy blue column runs through a pale background. Charlie blinks as he opens his eyes. He stares at a wavy double image of Alice. Thick white gauze encircles Charlie's head. As he unblinkingly gazes at Alice, her face comes into focus.
Miss Kenyon?
Yes.
I don't feel no smarter.
Alice smiles slightly as she gazes at Charlie. Later, Charlie sits next to the maze.
Ready? Stop.
As Anna, Alice, Richard, and Bert watch, Charlie draws a line on the diagram. Algernon runs through the maze. Algernon reaches the small container of food. Richard peers at Anna, who watches Charlie's progress. With his tongue partway out of his mouth, Charlie finishes. He immediately stands, peers into the maze, then frowns. Richard shakes his head. Charlie gazes downward. Elsewhere, Anna and Charlie sit at a table. Charlie reaches for the yellow pieces of a disassembled figure. He fingers one piece, then pulls back his hand.
Again, Charlie.
The others watch from behind a two-way mirror.
Again. Try it. Please.
Alice sits next to Richard, who pulls an unlit cigarette from his mouth.
How did his lessons go tonight?
Alice shrugs.
Just one more time.
I keep doing it again, and...
But try it, Charlie.
Post-surgical recovery is complete.
Richard examines paperwork.
Bert,
Stepping forward, Bert peers over Richard's shoulder at the paperwork.
Phase five mice. Look at their mental curve. He's shown no comparable intellectual progress.
No.
Charlie, I know that you can do it.
Well, I know I can't do it. Doctor, yesterday and the day before, you keep saying I can do it, and Miss Kenyon says I can do it, and everybody says I can do it, but I know I can't
but
do it.
I know you can do it.
I know I can't do it.
Charlie, try. It makes a lovely, nice figure.
I can't do it, Dr. Strauss. You know I can't do it. I know I can't do it, and I don't want to do it.
Standing, Charlie storms out. The others follow.
I can't learn nothing.
Charlie!
What's the matter? Does that operation make me dumber or something?
No, nothing of the sort.
Well, I can't do any of the puzzles, and I'll tell you something else. I ain't racing that Algernon no more. I'm sick of being beat by a mouse and people laughing at
Nobody
me.
Nobody is laughing
I
at you.
I don't care. I'm going out of here now.
Charlie marches past Alice through a door and down stone steps. Hitting the sidewalk, Charlie turns and stomps up the street. Inside, Anna turns to Richard, who walks off. Anna follows. Standing still, Alice stares into the distance. At an amusement park, Charlie smashes a red bumper car into a blue car. He whips his wheel around and slams into another red car. Backing up and spinning his wheel, Charlie crashes into other cars. He yanks on his steering wheel as he slams into as many cars as possible. In his room, Charlie slams his door. He marches across his room, sits on his bed, then folds his arms. Charlie picks up a book and flips through its pages.
My name is Dick. I live in a house. I have a sister named Jane and a dog named Spot.
He slams the book down.
My name is Charlie Gordon and I live in a room and I got no sister and no dog and I am stupid!
Charlie peers at a table where Algernon stands and sniffs inside his cage next to the maze.
And what are you doing here?
Charlie steps to the cage, then peers at Algernon.
Well, I ain't gonna race you.
He strides toward the door.
I know why they brought you over here, but I ain't gonna race you.
In the hall, Charlie slams his door.
'Cause I don't like you. You're not my friend.
Charlie Gordon! Do you have a girl in your room?
No, it's a him.
Charlie Gordon.
Charlie descends the stairs.
It's a mouse.
Young man, there are no mice in this house.
Well, there's one in my room. They brought him over in a cage, but I ain't gonna race him.
Cage. Charlie, I've been meaning to talk to you. Could you step in here, please? Monte. That nice Charlie Gordon is coming to visit.
Charlie descends to the foyer.
Charlie, you say a cage? A pet mouse?
Yeah, but I ain't gonna race him.
Charlie, come in here for a minute.
Mrs. Apple guides Charlie into her living room.
Sit down, Charlie.
Charlie starts to sit in a blue chair.
Don't sit on Monty.
A bulldog lies in the chair.
Sit down, Charlie.
Charlie and Mrs. Apple sit on a light blue settee.
Charlie.
Yeah.
Charlie, having a pet is a gift from God. Isn't that right, Monty?
I don't know, Miss Apple.
Don't argue with me, young man. I'm telling you. This little mouse is a blessing in disguise. First of all, a pet keeps you company. They don't talk back. They're loyal and loving. They are truly man's best friend. A little animal is one of God's creatures. They live only to comfort you. Now, Charlie, you go right back up there and you make up with him. Tell him you'll feed him, clean his cage, and give him water. That's all he wants. That and your love. And in return, he'll give you many happy hours.
Mrs. Apple walks over to Monty.
Monty, why don't we give Charlie one of your bones to give to the little mouse? Would you mind?
She scratches Monty's head, then reaches behind the dog and picks up a round piece of bone.
I don't know if mice are carnivorous or vegetarians, but, well, anyway, Charlie, here you are.
She hands Charlie the bone.
What's he going to call him?
They call him Algernon.
Well, you and Algernon are welcome down here at any time.
Thank you, Miss Apple.
Charlie leaves. Turning, Mrs. Apple places her hand on her hip as she gazes at Monty.
Algernon. What do you think of that, Montgomery?
Stepping into his room, Charlie gazes at Algernon. The mouse climbs sideways across the metal bars of its cage. Charlie closes the door. He sits at his chalkboard and erases the three misspelled words there. With his mouth moving, Charlie writes on the board, then stops. Peering at what he's written, he mouths out sounds, then keeps writing. Standing, Charlie steps toward the table. He stops, turns his head, then walks back to the chalkboard, where he crouches as he peers at three words, Wednesday and work misspelled, and school spelled correctly. He opens a dresser drawer, pulls out the scrap of paper from the bus, then holds it up next to the chalkboard. Peering from the chalkboard to the paper, Charlie smiles. He glances at Algernon. With his hands in his pockets, Charlie strolls to the table.
Hi, Alg. Want a race?
Picking up Algernon, Charlie moves the cage, slides a small stack of mimeograph diagrams, then sets one diagram on the table in front of himself. He picks up a pencil.
You ready, pal?
Charlie lowers Algernon into the maze. Charlie draws a line on the diagram as Algernon runs through the maze. Charlie's line reaches an X. He peers into the maze where Algernon runs to the food. Charlie smiles.
I beat ya!
Charlie backs away from the maze.
I beat you.
He hurries to the door.
I beat him!
Charlie runs outside and down the dark street. He falls, stands back up, then keeps running. Charlie runs down a street, then up the steps of the Niemer Strauss Clinic. Alice, Anna, and Richard hurry out of a small room. Charlie runs into a long foyer. Alice and the others rush down a staircase.
I beat him! I was in a room, and they put, and somebody, and a mouse,
I got the rapper, and I spelled school. And I went against him, and I put him, and I beat him. I creamed him. Miss Kenya, what happens now?
Alice, wearing a red dress, bends slightly as she writes on a blackboard. Sitting at a nearby desk, Charlie sucks on his finger as he peers at her body. As she backs away from the board, he drops his gaze.
Punctuated. Go ahead, punctuated.
Looking up, Charlie takes the chalk, then steps to the blackboard. As he adds punctuation to the Gettysburg Address, Alice smiles. Smiling, Charlie turns around.
Now, I got something all made up for you to punctuate.
Charlie rotates the blackboard. Two lines run across the side now facing them.
You punctuate that.
He hands the chalk to Alice, who gazes at the board. That that is, not is, not is, that it, it is.
That does not make sense.
She hands the chalk to Charlie, who nods once, then steps to the board.
That, that is,
comma,
is,
period.
That is not,
comma,
is not,
period.
Is that it?
Question mark.
It is.
Period.
So, student surpasses the teacher.
Charlie nods. Alice sits.
Say, Mrs. Kenyon.
Yes.
Where's Mr. Kenyon?
He died, Charlie.
Are you in love with Frank?
Alice holds out a small stack of books in the blue box. Charlie takes the stack.
Tomorrow's studies.
Basic chemistry.
As Charlie leaves, Alice writes on a sheet of paper.
Night, Charlie.
Bye, Miss Kennedy.
Alice taps a pencil against her forehead, then continues writing. In his room, Charlie eats cereal as he watches a video.
This is the capital of the United States. Our government is divided into three branches: the executive, the legislative, and the judicial.
Charlie turns off the alarm clock.
Legislative branches of Congress called. Turn off the teaching machine to answer.
A video of the U.S. Capitol freezes.
House of Representatives and, Senate.
Charlie adds a shot of milk to his bowl. Picking up a white device, he presses a button.
You are looking at a film of one of our country's most significant events. Who are these men? Why are they here? What did they do almost 200 years ago that affects your life today?
He presses the button.
Those men are...
He stands.
Getting ready.
He puts on his coat.
To sign the Declaration of Independence and declare our country free from England. And I'm getting ready for work.
Charlie turns off the teaching machine. He places the milk in the refrigerator, his bowl in the sink, then picks up a brown paper bag and a book. Grabbing his hat, Charlie glances at his chalkboard. RE colon, Algebra 1, French 1, History Timeline. Donning his hat, he turns off the light, then leaves. At the bakery, Gimpy notices Charlie sweeping the floor. He whispers into dark-haired Hank's ear. Hank nods. With his hands in his pockets, he strolls toward Charlie.
Hey, Charlie.
Yeah?
You know what day it is?
Well, I don't know, Gimp.
Oh, we aren't keeping you awake, are we?
It's that chick, huh, Charlie? Just won't let you alone, huh?
It's April Fool's Day, Charlie. That's what day it is.
His birthday.
Hank grabs a book from Charlie's back pocket.
Hey. The English Constitution?
Hank steps over to Gimpy.
Say, Gimp.
Yeah?
You know what a Magna Carta is?
Yeah, that's a cigar, ain't it?
Come on, Hank, I need that.
Gimpy flips through the book.
You really know all this stuff in here, Charlie? Or are you just looking at pictures?
Well, I know some of it.
Hell, Charlie, you're so smart that... Yeah, why not?
Here. Gimpy hands Hank the book.
See this machine, Charlie?
Yeah.
You know what it is?
Yeah, it's a machine that you work.
How would you like to work it?
Hey, Gimp, you kidding?
What do you mean, kidding, Joey? Man knows what the Magna Carta is. He ought to be able to operate a simple machine like a pastry mixer.
Yeah, well, it took you 2 weeks learning how. That's a very complicated machine.
Oh, not for Charlie. Here, come in here closer, Charlie. Now, look, Charlie, this is all you got to do. Step number one, you turn on your water. See? Make sure the temperature's 78 degrees, okay? Then we come over here and we set our water pressure at 140 pounds. You see that, Charlie, right there?
A dial.
Send it back. And turn on the water switch. You got this now, right? Now we follow our fresh water, Charlie, along that line to that valve.
Gimpy winks.
Oh, excuse me, Joey. Want to get it? And we come up here, Charlie, and we open up our flour hopper. Let's our flour down. You mix it with the water, okay? Come over here. Open up our bowl, Charlie.
Gimpy holds a button as the mixer opens.
I want you to get a look at this dough. Then we start up our agitator, Charlie. This steers up the dough inside. Okay, see it?
All right.
Charlie nods.
Then we close it up.
Gimpy holds down a different button. The mixer closes.
Now comes a very important thing, Charlie, these timing switches. You set your timing switches, and they're very important. Don't forget these. Okay? All right. Now, Charlie, you put all this together, and it comes out dough. What do you say?
I don't know.
Suppose he breaks it.
Then we get the day off.
Oh, April Fool's Day.
Hey, what's
Hank
that?
Holds his mouth open as he taps the floor with the broom.
Hey, watch Charlie.
Gimpy, Hank, and Joey watch Charlie as he examines the various knobs and dials. Charlie turns one knob to the left, adjusts two others, then turns the first one to the right. Charlie turns a small crank. A large dial's hand advances a quarter of the way around the dial, then stops. Charlie presses a black button. Nodding, Hank nudges Joey. Charlie steps to the mixer, then raises and lowers a lever. He presses a button. The side of the large dented machine opens. He presses a different button and the metal door stops moving. Charlie lifts a small switch. Inside the mixer, large slabs of dough rotate. Pressing the second button, the machine closes. Smiling, Hank crosses his arms as he watches. At the front of the machine, Charlie adjusts one final dial. Gazing at the three men, Charlie smiles.
Hey, Charlie, that was perfect!
Great, right, I love that. I didn't
think you could have done better, right? He couldn't have done better than that.
Gimpy nudges Hank aside. In split screen, Gimpy and Charlie peer at each other, Charlie smiling slightly and Gimpy staring. Charlie peers through a microscope at vibrating organisms.
Hey, Mrs. Kenyon. Come here, quick. Hey, look at that. There's a whole new world in there. Look at that.
It's exciting.
Yeah,
Charlie.
Yeah.
Alice peers through the microscope.
Yeah. Now.
She removes the slide.
Let's see if you can identify the activity in each of these slides.
She places a different slide onto the microscope stage beneath its lenses. Charlie gazes at her cleavage.
Is he in love with you? Right.
Charlie, I'd rather not discuss my personal life, if you don't mind. Not that there's anything secret about it, or even unusual. It has nothing to do with your program of learning. First slide.
I got a birthday present.
It's not my birthday.
It's not for you. Algernon.
Charlie pulls Algernon's cage from a shelf.
Birthday cheese. It is cheese cake.
What makes you think it's his birthday?
Well, how do you know it's not?
He sets the cage on a table.
That's true. Happy birthday, Algernon.
Happy birthday, Algernon.
Charlie places Algernon on a small circle of cheese.
It's very nice of you, Charlie.
Well, he's very special.
Standing, Alice steps to a table behind Charlie, then sits. She rapidly taps a pencil against the tabletop. Elsewhere, children finger paint.
Now, Judy, what?
Anna peers at a bespectacled girl sitting across a table.
Painted a house.
Isn't that nice?
Alice walks in.
And what is wrong?
I'll send your seat for you.
Oh, Mrs. Kenyon, that's nice that you came. Dean, would you be good enough and go over to Catty and play with the pumpkin so you could sit down, Mrs. Kenyon?
Would you do it, Dean, please?
Yeah. Thank you so
much.
Thanks a lot. That's nice what you painted.
Alice sits.
What did we
Alice peers at a girl's drawing.
The mouth? No. I got you a letter, Mrs. Kenyon. I'm afraid I can't accept your reason.
I'm holding him back. He knows the answers and the questions before I even open the book.
And?
And what?
John. You seem tense. Is it that important for you to resign from this project?
I gave you my reasons.
Which I must reject. You're a psychologist. You know that Charlie has made a transference and at this point is completely dependent upon you.
Yes?
He's involved with you emotionally. That's normal, isn't it?
I don't know.
And you are involved with him emotionally?
Why do you ask that? I am engaged, you know.
Oh, I met your fiancé. Very charming. How long have you been engaged?
I'll stay until the convention, Doctor. No longer.
Alice hands a small jar of paint to a girl across the table.
Bye-bye.
Alice leaves.
Bye-bye.
At the bakery, Charlie slips his time card into a metal slot, then opens a small manila envelope. He shakes the envelope, then pulls out some folded cash, which he shoves into his pocket. He shakes the envelope again, then extracts a pink piece of paper, which he unfolds and reads. He gazes into the distance. A half-built skyscraper towers over an old brick building.
Faneuil Hall, built in the early 1740s and given to the city by the merchant Peter Faneuil. It burned in 1761 but was rebuilt. It's still in use as a market, a meeting place, museum. Charlie, why is it known as the Cradle of Liberty? Charlie?
At an outdoor market, Charlie gazes downward. Alice peers at him from across a large pile of pumpkins. She steps up to Charlie.
Charlie.
He smiles at her. Together they walk off.
If we'd walked in there, say, in 1774, who might we have met attending a meeting of protest? What's the matter?
Nothing.
The next stop along the Freedom Trail is the North Church, built 1723, Boston's oldest church. For what historic incident is North Church known?
I'm sorry I didn't.
What happened here that became part of our national heritage?
Two lanterns in the steeple signaled Paul Revere. The British were on their way to Concord.
Right. Any questions?
Yeah, I was wondering why people that would never dream of laughing at a blind or a crippled man will laugh at a moron.
What happened?
My friends at the bakery got up a petition and they got fired.
Oh.
Is that a automatic law, something like gravity? Increased intelligence equals lost friends.
You needn't worry about losing your job. Doctors want you to work full-time at the clinic, studying and learning and getting paid, too.
Will you be there all the time?
Yes. I imagine so. At least until the convention. The doctors have been asked to head a symposium, the annual meeting of the Society for Cerebral Research. I suspect you and Algernon are scheduled to be their prime exhibits.
What will we have to do?
Oh, maybe speak a foreign language, do an exercise in Neo-Boolean math.
Both of us?
At a cafe...
George Bernard Shaw wrote something once.
Pass the ketchup, please.
I didn't know he wrote that.
What?
Pass the ketchup, please.
Is it chowder, sir?
No, it's a lady's.
No, seriously. Thank you. He said, whenever you learn something, it seems at first...
Pardon, sir.
...as if you've lost something. A whole universe is opening up for you, Charlie. It's a world that's always been there, but... not for you. Not till now. Cream, please. Now you're growing, and growth causes pain.
You do your job very well. Very well.
At the Institute, Bert steps to Anna, who examines a sheet of paper.
Are you quite certain of your evaluation of Charles Rorschach?
There's no question, in my opinion.
Thank you.
Anna picks up several large drawings, then steps to a plush office, where Richard sits on a red couch speaking into a tape recorder.
Once the initial breakthrough occurred, subject completed all elementary schoolwork within 5 weeks. A capacity speed-up occurred during the high school phase, and all this work was accomplished in 3 weeks. Instructions were then accelerated.
You have been pushing him much too hard.
The subject made the leap from rote memorization to a grasp of abstract theory, with the next step that of attaining insightful function and the ability to restructure. Subsequently...
Richard, may I please have your attention? Emotionally, he's still a child. Frightened. Insecure. Look at these drawings. I've had him do.
She sets out the drawings across from Richard.
They are representative of the last 2 months. Each one progressively more disturbed.
Disturbed? He likes to paint.
He still can't believe that he's being paid to do nothing but learn and paint and improve.
But can't you see? I cautioned you about this before.
Nude sketches.
Well, these aren't disturbed. They're more sophisticated. More abstract than the ones he did a couple of months ago.
You go right on, ignoring even the evidence. Come.
Anna opens a door.
Come.
Richard follows her into the foyer.
Anna, I don't think we should interrupt his studies.
Stepping forward, Anna opens a curtain. Beyond glass, Charlie paints as Alice sits nearby.
I mean... quinine and citizen.
Structure of the insulin molecule.
Double chain, 51 amino acids employing 17 basic aminos cross-linked by sulfur atoms.
Alice reads from a thick book.
What metal and what gas would you combine in order to convert heat
into electricity? Tantalum and cesium vapor.
Yes. What is the technique called the algebra of...
Anna turns down a speaker.
What are you trying to tell me? Some kind of a sideshow.
Now, Anna, don't be ridiculous.
You're pushing your program for its intellectual development much too rapidly. It has to keep pace with my program for its emotional development, or the imbalance will become dangerous. I thought we were to be satisfied with a minor miracle.
What are you afraid of?
To help a retarded human being become a more productive member of society.
He has shown no indication of any mental ceiling. So why are you afraid to reach for whatever that ceiling may be?
Alice and a man step into an apartment building.
In any event, we shall have to give Mrs. Kinney and her notice.
Inside, Charlie peers through a window as Alice and the man get off an elevator.
All she can do now is ask him questions out of books that he's already absorbed. What he needs at this point is a giant step forward, new conceptualization, inductive thinking. And that calls for experts, not Alice Kinney.
The man kisses Alice.
I will say it once more, Richard. Charlie Gordon is still a child emotionally.
I don't agree.
As Alice disappears into her apartment, the man steps back onto the elevator. Wearing a suit and carrying a package wrapped in plain brown paper, Charlie opens a stairwell door, then steps to Alice's apartment door. Alice opens the door. She stares at Charlie.
Charlie, what is it?
I brought you a present.
Oh. Okay, come in.
Charlie steps into Alice's apartment. She shuts the door.
Very nice of you, Charlie. What's the occasion?
Well, I just...
Alice takes the package.
I want you to have a present.
Alice sits on a couch.
Down.
As she reaches for scissors, Charlie sits next to her. Alice snips the strings around the package, then pulls the wrapping off and lays it aside. She opens a cardboard box, revealing two wrapped gifts.
Lovely paper, Charlie.
She picks up an antique handheld mirror.
Beautiful. Must have been terribly expensive.
You like it?
It's beautiful, but it's too much.
He winds wrapping string around his finger.
Just beautiful. Thank you.
He only kissed you on the cheek.
He?
Frank?
Charlie, have you been spying on me?
I've been falling in love with you.
Charlie gazes downward.
No. These feelings aren't what you think. It isn't love, it's...
The string unwinds.
We have fun working together, and... But you have to understand that between...
Charlie smiles as he gazes at Alice. Leaning forward, Charlie wraps his arm around Alice's shoulder and kisses her. Alice pushes against his chest as she falls back. Struggling to break free, she pushes Charlie. He pulls her to the floor and kisses her as she twists to get away. Alice tears his hand from her breast and shoves it away. Grabbing his arm, Alice swings him onto his back. He grabs the back of her neck. Alice falls against the couch. Kneeling, Charlie kisses her, pressing his face against hers. She tears his hand from her neck, then slaps him and falls back onto the floor.
Oh! You think anyone would ever want you? You stupid moron!
Charlie runs out. Later, he splashes red and blue paint against one of his paintings. A computerized image of a man jerks across a screen. In a photo, Charlie tosses his jacket. Riding a motorcycle, he crashes through an enlarged photo of himself. He rides up a dirt road. Elsewhere, Alice walks slowly by herself. Riding up a slight incline, Charlie crashes to the ground. Charlie removes his gold helmet, then smiles as he staggers off. On the back of a motorcyclist's sleeveless jacket, Charlie Baby. In a desert, the bearded biker wearing a blue bandana rides with different women on the back of his bike. He kisses them as he rides. Bikers circle a prone figure. In multiple screens, the biker rides with different women. Alice walks by herself. A goateed man wearing a pale red suit coat dances as a person plays electric guitar. A neon sign, love. The man dances with a blonde woman. He smiles and nods. In multiple screens, people bob their heads and flail their arms as they dance. On her couch, Alice reads a book. The man lifts his bent arms up and down as he dances. Alice closes the book. People smoke joints. A flashing warning. Caution, smoking may be hazardous to your health. The biker holds a joint to one woman's mouth. She exhales smoke. At the Institute, Alice runs her finger along the top of the maze. Holding his shirt in his hand, Charlie steps into his room. He peers across the room at Alice, who stands with her hands behind her back.
Saw your cycle outside.
It's for sale.
What did you learn?
I'm back. What did you learn?
I'm here.
Alice steps toward Charlie. A door behind her slowly swings shut. Autumn leaves flutter in a breeze. In a sleeping bag, Charlie and Alice kiss. She lies on her back and gazes up at the trees. A haze of sunlight shines between a thicket of branches. Charlie lies back. Later, they run through the woods.
Marry me, Alice.
Charlie, I could never keep up with you. And I don't want to hold you back, and I don't want to be left behind.
Einstein had a wife.
Stopping, they hug.
Didn't Einstein say that everything was in motion, that nothing ever stands still?
Small yellow leaves quiver on a thin branch. Standing on an empty rotating carousel, Alice and Charlie kiss.
Marry me, pretty girl, marry me.
We'll marry at quarter past Wednesday on the 74th of November. And our anniversary will happily be on those days when we both remember.
Trees blur as they swirl past. Charlie and Alice zoom down a long slide curving out of a silo. Laughing, they slide to a stop. Red leaves shake in a breeze. Alice sits facing Charlie as he rows a boat.
Ever been anywhere?
Someday.
Portugal, straight ahead.
Yeah. Can smell the olives.
On a lake, they row near a sailing ship.
Ship ahoy. Abandoned schooner off the starboard bow. Want a ship out?
Okay, where are the sails?
Who needs sail?
In a haze of bluish-green light, they kiss.
Does captain of the ship I now declare us man and wife?
I signed on only as first mate.
The empty rowboat floats near the ship. In a red convertible, Charlie and Alice drive through the countryside.
You know what's going to happen in the year 2018?
I'm never going to let this year end.
It'll be our golden wedding anniversary.
Oh, Charlie, let's worry about breakfast.
Alice lies in the sleeping bag as Charlie cooks over a small campfire.
I think Algernon has found a wife.
Or his true love.
The plural of mouse is mice, and the plural of spouse must be spice.
Oh.
Gazing at each other, they smile. Sitting on the shore of a lake, Charlie sets two red and yellow leaves afloat.
They say, Charlie, the true love is letting go.
The leaves float on small pieces of wood shaped like boats. Later, Alice and Charlie walk arm in arm.
What's enough, love?
Always a little more than anyone ever gets.
In hazy sunlight, they hug. Light green leaves shake in the wind. Anna and Richard step into an auditorium where men set up lights on a stage.
Please, couldn't we stop these recriminations and use the time to decide tomorrow's program?
All right, you still really believe that he'll be here?
But of course, you were on the extension. You hurt them. They promised.
How do we know what's happened to Charlie in the past 4 weeks? Whether he's learned more or just stood still, we have no immediate evaluation. I certainly don't want to.
May we concentrate on the presentation?
All right, what are your ideas on the programming?
How much time should we program for Algernon and the Fate Five Knives?
I thought we agreed to eliminate that part of the presentation.
No, I did not agree to that. It is essential to show the entire graph of Algernon's various stages.
In my opinion, we should concentrate on Charlie, the preoperative testing, and then you cap it all off by bringing him out on stage. Why don't you just leave the programming to me, Anna?
You know...
They climb steps to the stage.
Sometimes you give me the feeling you have already written your acceptance speech for the ceremonies in Stockholm.
Bravo! Bravo! Bravo!
With their arms around each other, Charlie and Alice step down an aisle.
You made us lose a lot of valuable time.
Time, as you've often taught me, Professor, is relative as it creeps on in its petty pace from day to day.
To the last syllable of recorded time.
Edgar Allan Shakespeare.
Oh, you both look happy.
I have never felt happy. There were no telephones where you were, Mrs. Kinney, and no post offices until yesterday.
I didn't have a dime. I didn't have a stamp. I didn't have the time.
She didn't have a dime, time, or the inclination.
Hiya, Charlie.
Hey, Bert.
Mrs. Kinney.
How are you? How's Algernon?
Oh, last week he said hello to me in Sanskrit.
What'd you say to him?
Well, what do you say to a mouse who says hello to you in Sanskrit? I said hello.
Homecoming. We still got a little champagne left. Champagne with a plastic top, symbol of our times.
Now that you're here, I want to run over tomorrow's program.
Very well. What would you like, Professor?
Charlie sways as he pours.
Based on photosynthesis and its effect on fourth-generation computers. By the way, how do your surgical techniques work on retarded computers? And you, Dr. Strauss, what would you like for an emotional effect? Would you like ideational activity, or would you like fragmented self-image?
I would like a drink.
Fragmented grape.
Thank you.
Come on, Professor, cheer up. After tomorrow, you're going to be on the cover of Time and Newsweek, and you, Dr. Strauss, are going to be in the centerfold of Playboy.
They each raise a plastic cup. Charlie and Alice raise their cups to each other. Charlie mouths, I love you. The next day, people fill the auditorium.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is my honor at this time to present to you the distinguished Dr. Richard Niemer and his colleague, Dr. Anna Strauss, who are responsible for the Algernon Gordon effect.
Offstage, Richard steps to Bert, who holds Algernon's cage.
With their eminent qualifications, through their published papers...
Bert, I told you we're not going to use the Phase 5 group.
I asked her to bring them. Some of the behavioral psychologists in the audience might care to see them.
Do you think that's advisable?
I think it is absolutely essential that...
Dr. Anna Strauss and Dr. Richard Niemer.
Anna and Richard step onto the stage, where they shake hands with a dark-haired man wearing a suit. As the man leaves the stage, Anna and Richard step to a podium.
Learned colleagues.
Alice and Charlie stand backstage.
Today, we'll deal first with a... Give me a cigarette.
Charlie pulls a cigarette from a suit coat pocket, then hands it to Alice.
Which my association covers.
Thanks. I didn't know you smoked.
I don't.
He strikes a match, then lights the cigarette.
Listen, there's absolutely no need to be nervous.
No. There's only a few hundred of the world's most eminent scientists out there. No reason to be nervous.
Never mind about them.
She slips her arm through his.
You are talking directly to me.
We yes. Do not know what causes the type
of... You stand
of
where I can see you. Right there. Charlie Gordon. Let me know.
Strolling past a curtain, Charlie peers at Algernon's cage.
Of the kind which induces defective biochemical reaction and causes brain damage. Fortunately, while the destruction to the tissue is irreversible, the protein process is not. Many researchers are able to reverse the process through control of chemicals, which combine with the defective enzymes and change the molecular shape of the interfering key, as it were. This is also central in our technique. But first, we remove the damaged portions of the brain and permit the implanted tissues, which have been chemically revitalized, to produce brain protein at an accelerated and supernormal rate. Dr. Strauss.
Richard and Anna bow slightly to each other. Anna steps to the podium.
And now, we would like to show you a film study of Charlie Gordon when he first came to the clinic.
The auditorium goes dark. A projector's light shines from the middle of the crowd. Charlie stands near a large screen.
Got my rabbit's foot.
Yeah, that's very good. Shoes, gloves.
Shoes and gloves, yeah. Shoes and gloves. You wear them.
Yeah, that's right. Morning, afternoon.
Morning.
Charlie, you don't have to worry about passing or failing, not these tests.
Morning, afternoon.
On screen, Charlie juts out his jaw and widens his eyes.
It's a very funny face, Charlie.
That was Charlie Gordon then. Ladies and gentlemen, I would like you to meet Charlie Gordon now.
Anna peers to her right. His hands in his pockets, Charlie stands still. Richard steps toward the wing, then stops. He and Anna peer across the stage. Alice walks toward Charlie.
Charlie? Charlie?
Turning, Charlie steps to Alice, who takes his hand. Together, they walk around the curtain. Alice lets go of Charlie's hand, and he walks onto the stage, where he steps to the center and faces the audience. A single light illuminates Charlie. The audience sits in darkness. Charlie peers up at several stage lights, then at the audience members who stare at him. Bits of dull light reflect from some people's faces or foreheads.
Are there any questions? Did you enjoy the film?
Nobody moves.
Mr. Gordon.
Some people turn their heads.
How do you feel at the present moment about your development?
Grateful, sir.
You are happy about it?
Yes, sir.
Why?
Because it has allowed me to see.
To see what?
The world.
And what do you see in that world?
Well, my eyes are new, Doctor.
And what do they see, Mr. Gordon?
Things as they are.
And?
And what they are becoming.
Can you give me an example, Mr. Gordon?
No, sir, you give me one.
Very well.
Very well.
Modern science.
Rampant technology. Conscience by computer.
Modern art.
Dispassionate draftsman.
Foreign policy.
Brave new weapons.
Today's youth.
Joyless, guideless.
Today's religion.
Breachment by popularity poll.
Standard of living.
A TV in every room.
Education.
A TV in every room.
The world's future, Mr. Gordon.
Brave new hates, brave new bombs, brave new wars.
The coming generation.
Test tube conception, laboratory birth, TV education, brave new dreams, brave new hates, brave new wars, a beautifully purposeless process of society suicide.
Richard glares at Charlie.
Any more questions? In the back, any more questions about things as they are and what they're becoming? No? I have a question.
Charlie turns to Anna and Richard.
Professor Namor. Charlie Gordon. Come on, Professor, you know. Charlie Gordon. You know, but you haven't told me.
Charlie turns back to the audience.
Anybody out there answer the question, Charlie Gordon? Anyone in the back answer the question, Charlie Gordon? No. Well, I'm disappointed in you, doctors. You're not very smart. You're not even as smart as a mouse. Because he knows. Algernon showed me. The answer to the question, Charlie Gordon, is... Charlie Gordon is a fella who will very shortly be what he used to be.
Charlie turns back to Richard and Anna. He holds out Algernon, who lies dead in his hand.
Professor Namor, why didn't you tell me the success of the operation was only temporary?
Richard turns to Anna, who returns his gaze. Charlie dashes outside, where he runs up a crowded sidewalk past businessmen before heading for a street corner. Hurrying outside, Anna peers up and down the sidewalk. In the center of a busy intersection, a traffic cop blows his whistle and holds up his gloved hands. A man in a suit bumps into Alice. People stream past in both directions. Elsewhere, Charlie runs past a metal railing. A power plant and a crane loom in the near distance. Winded, Charlie slows as he steps into a park. He staggers across a walkway and a patch of grass to a swing set. He leans against its metal frame, then sits on a swing. On the swing next to him, a vision of his old self appears. Charlie runs off. Nighttime, Charlie runs down a deserted sidewalk. He stops. Nearby, an image of his former self gazes at him. Charlie runs. Algernon sniffs as he scampers through the maze. Charlie runs down a narrow corridor, then turns into another passage. Sliding to a stop, he tries to open a door. He hurries to another door, then another, but they're both locked. From another corridor, his former self appears. As Charlie runs off, the image disappears. It reappears as Charlie peers around a corner. Charlie runs in the opposite direction. He turns another corner and his image pops up against a wall. Charlie backs up, then turns and runs. His former self slowly follows. Charlie glances over his shoulder as he slides along a wall. Charlie slips and falls to the floor as his former self approaches. Charlie stands, then runs around another corner. He bursts into his room, then slams the door shut. Panting, Charlie leans against the door. He peers around his room. A table holding the microscope and other items disappears. Another table and a typewriter fade away. The teaching machine and posters vanish. Little by little, books and equipment disappear. His chalkboard with misspelled words appears. His former self materializes and smiles up at him. Charlie rushes out. In a crowded bar, a bespectacled man plays piano. At a bar top surrounding the piano, Charlie sits alone smoking a cigarette. He stubs out his cigarette, then downs his drink. A man and a woman step up to the bar next to Charlie, and as Charlie stands, the blonde woman sits in his seat.
Thank you. You're welcome.
Thank
Let
you.
Me buy you a drink.
No, I'm all right.
Come on.
I wish you would.
Waitress?
At a bar across the room, a waitress wearing a red vest raises her hand and nods. Glancing toward the waitress, Charlie spots a dark-haired busboy carrying a large tray covered with glasses. The busboy stops, and the waitress takes the glasses two at a time, then places them onto the bar. Charlie stares at the busboy, who stands with his mouth hanging open as he gazes around the room. Turning around, Charlie drinks. The young man starts to lose his grip on the tray. A glass falls. Patrons smile and laugh as they watch the busboy. As he crouches, all of the glasses slide off the tray. Everyone but Charlie looks. Charlie turns. The busboy places the glasses one by one onto the tray. Everyone but Charlie laughs. Charlie steps forward, crouches, and helps the busboy set glasses onto the tray. At the Institute, Anna sets a mouse into a cage, then slides the cage shut.
The entire Phase 5 group. All the same as Algernon.
Bert hands Anna a sheet of paper.
Not one of the mice is any longer capable of solving the simplest problem.
As Anna sits across from Richard, Alice steps in.
Did you find it?
Why didn't you tell me? Why did you have to hide it?
But we only discovered an indication of this condition last week, Mrs. Kenyon, and only in a few of the Phase 5 mice. I assumed it was simply erratic behavior, individual behavior. There was no need to alarm Charlie.
Of course not. With the convention coming up, why should you both miss your moments of glory?
Now,
before
Mrs.
we had a chance to run further checks, he had no right to make it public.
No right?
Have you any idea what he has done to our standing in the scientific community?
Just don't let us calmly, dispassionately try to decide what we are going to do about this situation.
Which situation? Your standing in the scientific community or Charlie?
They're related, you know.
Charlie ascends a staircase to the Institute's second floor.
Charlie's a human being, not a laboratory animal.
This regressive syndrome may be limited to the mice. And now I would thank you, Mrs. Kenyon, if you...
Something, but not close enough.
Let me go.
Is there a second operation you can give him? Is there some corrective surgery?
No.
I see. Well, tell me, what do you do around here with the specimens that fail? The freezer first, then the incinerator?
Anna and Richard spot Charlie standing in the hallway. Alice turns. Stepping forward, Charlie leans against the doorway.
How can I help?
At ITT Data Services.
Consider the human brain as an information processing system of several parts. Cortical service consisting of distributed logic arrays, various multidirectional buses, and distributed converters for converting synaptic memory to DNA storage.
As Charlie speaks, a dark-haired man sits at a typewriter.
One area for investigation is the doctor's hypothesis that the mind can be permanently improved through surgery and enzyme enrichment, thereby utilizing unused portions of the brain. Can you program that?
That's a little vague, Mr. Gordon. Could you give me more detailed specs?
Well, it correlates to what we've already programmed with DNA conversion.
I see. Can we use the same system?
Right, just change the variables. Is mental improvement temporary because it lacks appropriate DNA conversion, because of storage limitation, which tends to overload and gradually disables the repaired area? Any combination of those factors.
Run it.
Charlie peers through a microscope.
Assuming the brain neurons store information on a temporary basis only, let us assume...
Electrodes dot Charlie's head.
Okay, this one's finished. Assuming the brain neurons store information on a temporary basis only, let us assume that this information is subsequently coded into DNA molecules.
Anna and Richard peer at Charlie through thick glass.
Preventing storage of far more material than the nerves could hold all by themselves. It could be that this transformation takes place during sleep and is indeed one of the purposes and needs for sleeping.
Charlie writes on a blackboard.
And for dreaming.
Charlie lights a cigarette.
Simulating brain damage. Comparing homologous lesions in the tissue of animals and corresponding.
Elsewhere, Charlie sits by himself.
It requires no great sense of the imagination to visualize a possible connection between protein synthesis and.
Standing, Charlie steps to a mantle holding a clock and a large mirror with a gilt frame.
Perhaps the only possible answer to our question is whatever we said the mind is, we will discover it is not. It may be that we have been trying to capture something which is scientifically.
Charlie peers at his reflection, then looks away.
Which by its very nature is scientifically premature.
Anna steps into the room.
Charlie, go.
Anna adjusts her winter coat.
Go home, Charlie. You'll work better in the morning.
I'm finished. Work is finished.
That's good. Then you can go home and sleep for at least 2 days.
Charlie sets a tape recorder onto a table.
These tapes will have to be programmed. Could they do it tonight?
If you go home and sleep.
I'd rather wait.
Might take all night.
I'll wait.
Charlie hands Anna a cassette tape. She places it in her purse, then leaves. Charlie closes the door behind her. Daytime. Outside the Institute, a bird flits about the tops of tall plants with large green leaves. On a strip of lawn, Charlie sits in a chair, his legs crossed at the knee and his chin in his hand. On a nearby branch, a light brown bird with a white underbelly sits. Charlie peers at the bird. Inside, Alice, wearing a white lab coat, steps to a window and gazes out. Anna and Richard, also wearing lab coats, descend stone steps, then step toward Charlie.
Charlie, your evaluations were correct.
Richard holds out paperwork. Charlie glances at it, then peers up at Richard.
That's too bad. It's such a promising theory.
It is. It still is.
Charlie stands.
Thank you.
Charlie walks through a gate and onto a sidewalk. Alice watches from the window. Charlie crosses a street, then walks across a grassy median. Later, Alice steps into Charlie's room, where Charlie stands gazing out of a small window. Charlie turns toward Alice. Alice steps toward Charlie.
Hi.
Hi. Felt like coffee. Everything's closed.
Charlie Gordon's. Open 24 hours a day, you know that.
Charlie pours a cup of coffee.
hungry? Want some eggs?
No, just coffee.
It's not too strong.
He hands her the cup.
Marry me, Charlie. Now. Tonight.
Get your spoon.
Charlie takes a spoon from a cupboard. Stepping past a stack of books and a blackboard covered with equations and symbols, Charlie steps to the small chair, which stands next to the folded and unused chalkboard. Charlie pauses, then picks up the chair and carries it to Alice. Setting the chair in front of her, he sits, then holds out the spoon. Smiling, she takes it.
Marry me.
Charlie smiles slightly. Alice sets down the coffee cup, then sits.
All right, don't marry me.
Motion carried.
But I'm going to stay, right here. Whenever you feel like telling me to go, just let me know. Just tell me so. I'll go. I'll leave.
Leave. Please leave.
Alice stands, picks up her purse, then steps slowly toward the door. Stopping, she turns to Charlie.
Good night.
Good night.
Alice leaves. Alice watches as Charlie sits on one end of a seesaw, two children sitting on the opposite end. As Charlie rises into the air, he smiles broadly. Starring Cliff Robertson as Charlie, Claire Bloom as Alice, Lilia Scala as Dr. Strauss, Leon Janney as Dr. Niemer, Ruth White as Mrs. Apple, Richard Van Patten as Bert, Skipper McNally as Gimpy, Barney Martin as Hank, William Dwyer as Joey, and Dan Morgan as Patty. The producer of Charlie gratefully acknowledges the assistance and cooperation of the following United States government agencies, private corporations, and institutions: the President's Committee for Mental Retardation, the United States Government Public Health Service, the Boston City Hospital, the St. Coletta School for Exceptional Children, Tufts University, Northeastern University, the Boston Center for Adult Education, Audiovisual Teaching Machine by Panacolor, Incorporated, Educational Films by Encyclopedia Britannica's Educational Corporation, the City of Boston, Massachusetts, description created by...